The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
I'm back. It is 8:15 and I'm delighted to say that Mike Quirk, leash manager and host of a brilliant new coaching podcast, is with us on the line. Mike, how are you getting on?
I'm good, Owen. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. So the last month or so, I'd imagine, has been an interesting enough time to be an inter-county manager. Not a lot has happened, but I'd imagine there's been a lot of chopping and changing in terms of how you approach 2021.
Yeah, it has been interesting, and it's also probably been one of the least interesting ones because, plans get torn up and different things. But I suppose, like everybody during this pandemic, it's happened to all of us. But it's been a struggle. It's a struggle for the players, really, more than anybody else. Like, I mean, we'll adapt and move on, and sure, whatever happens. But it's just frustrating for people. It's frustrating for everybody, I know. But in the context that we're speaking about, players have put in a massive shift. Our fellas have probably done somewhere in the region of about 50 or 60 individual sessions, you know, between now and the point that we exited the Leinster Championship to Dublin, and have put a massive shift into that side of things. And now you just want to reward that by getting back in the field. And obviously, just for now, we can't get back there.
How soon after the Dublin game did you start doing individual training again?
They were anxious to start it pretty quickly, to be honest. You know, they kind of had that drive themselves. They knew they had a little bit of work to do in different things, and they were really, you know, just bursting to get back at it. And, you know, the funny thing with this one, like we actually wanted to, I wanted to shut it down for a while and just give fellas a break mentally as much as anything else from training. Not that we were putting massive demands on them or anything, but like it was the players that didn't want to shut it down because they found the training was giving them a, you know, a positive kind of a focal point in the week, that if they were able to do a couple of sessions, that it was something, you know, and they were logging it in and they were doing all this, that it was a focus for them more than anything else. And they were the ones that wanted to keep going and keep driving it, while maybe we were trying to say, look, maybe it'd be better to take a little break for a while just to refresh things. But so they've adapted fine. The players are good with it, but it's just that frustration, that lack of clarity and certainty about when and where we'll actually get back in the field.
I guess if that clarity had been given before the end of the year, that the GEA knew that they wouldn't be given that level 5 exemption, maybe players all around the country take a different attitude to it. They enjoy their Christmas a little bit more, and they realise that there's plenty of time in January and February and March to be training for the return of the leagues.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that took us all by surprise. Nobody was expecting that announcement when it came, that we hadn't been... that we had our level 5 or elite status had been revoked or whatever. But I suppose, look, when you look at the prevalence of the new variants of the virus, it's probably not altogether shocking that they want to keep things as quiet and as low traffic as possible. But I was just surprised that there hadn't been better communication in that sense, that, you know, there wasn't somebody from the government or from the GEA had picked up this information a little bit earlier and communicated it to us. And yeah, it would have made maybe a small difference to fellas. But either way, you know, they're like everything, Owen, we'll be guided by NPHET and by the government in terms of what's best for public health. And, you know, there's nobody putting pressure on anybody to get back training. Like for us, you know, obviously we're anxious to get back in the field, but, you know, I'm far more anxious that everybody's families stay safe, that, you know, we don't go back training and we're not the cause of somebody bringing this into a household and a mom or dad or granddad or grandmom or somebody getting ill because of us. So, look, whatever happens. But like everybody else, it's just that natural sense of frustration that it can't be now.
Mike, I know that it's a strange time for the players and your communication with the players will be different now than it ever was. But in terms of a strength and conditioning perspective, a lot of the players will be doing work at home, whether it's home gyms or a bit of running. And I know Tom Hargroves is heavily involved with the strength and conditioning with yourselves and Leash. Is it a case that yourself and Tom are in constant communication in terms of building, I guess, personalised training sessions for the players at the moment, or how does that work?
Yeah, very much. Like, I mean, Tom is brilliant at what he does, and he's probably in more regular contact with the players than I am, and I'm talking to Tom every day. But it's just that idea of an individual development plan, really, that some guys needed to put on size, other guys needed to do other stuff, and everything is very individualised to what they needed to do, and Like, some guys have gone away, lads, like a couple of months ago, and bought their own weights and set up their own gym in their garage, and like just done everything that they could possibly do to give themselves the best possible chance, you know. And so I'm sure that's not unique to us, our fellas in Laois, but you know, the players have put in a huge shift over this period of time. And look, it's just, you know, the inter-county stuff is one thing, and you keep going down the line to the clubs and to the teenagers who are lacking that kind of, you know, that focus, I suppose. Just the point that, yeah, we're training on Tuesday, we're training on Friday, we're training on Sunday, we've got a game, and that kind of positive focus that the whole country is missing, or the whole country that's involved in GAA and sport in general are lacking, I suppose.
You mentioned the teenagers there and the lack of focus and, I guess, outlet they have at the moment. Yeah. And, you know, we had, I spoke to Hector O'Huckagon on the Sunday paper review, just gone there and off the ball. And, you know, he was talking about the need for teenagers, especially, to have a voice at the moment. How they, you know, I guess have a lot more screen time than they ever had at the moment, whether it's PlayStation or Xbox or their phone. And they need that outlet. And it's a touchy one and a difficult one, given that public health has to come first as well.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on that in the need for, I guess, young people and teenagers to have that voice and outlet at the moment?
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, I think they absolutely do. And it's a kid. Look, I see my own kids are only 10, but, like, you know, it's harder now when the weather is like it is today. It's pouring rain. You don't want kids on screens. You don't want them, you know, doing all these things. But, like, for example, our own club now, the kids, the Cairns or Athletes, where my clubs play, my kids play, like, their coach set up these sessions that they have to do themselves, and they have to log in, and or not log in, but it's just kind of tick a box to say, yeah, we've it done. And, you know, that they have to go out and practice their skills and do different things. And it just gives them, okay, lads, look, and we're going to do this on Tuesday and Friday. And until we get back in the field altogether, that's what we're going to do. And I just think, look, everybody's not into sport. Not everybody's not into GAA. But for the kids that are, I think it's a really positive thing to have that routine of knowing I'm going training. I'm going mixing with my mates. It's a positive thing. It's exercise. It's ball. It's very important for kids and their development. And I think, look, with the way schools are hopefully going to open up next month, it would be great that the GAA, if you know, in particular, can lobby that you know, those teenagers, those youths can eventually get back in the field in some way or shape, whether that's your non-contact pods of 15 or whatever way it is. But they need a voice, and it can't be just all about inter-county. Obviously, I'm speaking about that, but I'm obviously very conscious that all those people need an outlet as well, you know.
Can I just ask, and it's something that's come up recently in terms of the GPA and, you know, helping GAA players with life outside of sport and outside of their inter-county careers, that, you know, Aaron Gillan was one of the 52 inter-county players to explore what the GPA is essentially offering in, you know, helping players with business development advice. And we saw with Cavan GAA recently as well, they had this Live Local, Work Local initiative where they want inter-county players to have jobs close by, that they don't have to go up to Dublin to get work and make things awkward for their inter-county careers and life after sport as well. So how has that changed in your view from even when you were a player, that maybe there's more awareness, even with maybe from your own examples within Laois, more awareness of the post-playing life for players?
Yeah, I think that's been a big development of all sport coaching. This idea of taking a more holistic view of the player as a person first and a player second, as opposed to the other way around, which was probably the way it was for a long, long time in inter-county. It was about how much you could squeeze out of the player and how many games you could win and how successful you'd be. Whereas now, I think that view has it's starting to change. That's still very prevalent in a lot of places. But I wouldn't be to the forefront of knowing what the GPA are doing exactly. I know they have different courses, and we've been offered different courses, and players are getting more help with that idea of educating themselves and getting that business development and seeing what they want to do. And there is an awful lot more now being done for players in that regard, as opposed to 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I think you see that again. You see that all the way down the line, where now coaches are starting to focus on the kids and, you know, that side of things outside of football. You know, you saw the documentary about Paddy Christie in Ballymun and how he impacted the lives of those kids away from Gaelic football. And I think that idea is starting to transgress far more in all sports, where coaches are really looking at the whole person and seeing how they can help them, whether it's in school or with their exams or whatever stuff is going on in their lives, far more than just what they can do between the white lines. And I think that's a really important and positive place for sport to be going.
When did you realise that, Mike? Was there a moment in your own career when you thought to yourself, God, actually getting the most out of myself as a person is actually going to help me as a footballer or as a basketball player?
It was probably a slow burn, really, Owen. You don't really think of it, you know, when you're playing and you're in the middle of it. You know, it's just when you probably get a little bit older and you start to look at guys and you say, like, yeah, this guy can perform really well in the field, but maybe he's got an awful lot of stuff going on in his life. Or suddenly somebody tells you something that you saw a guy who was playing really well in the field or maybe playing poorly. And then suddenly you get a phone call and he tells you that, you know, he's struggling with something or... and that's incredibly kind of personal stuff. And that stuff does affect the outlook that you have on what you're doing, you know, that you realize that it's not just about, you know, and I'm not talking specifically about Leisure. I'm talking about, like, I was involved with my own club and different things. But it's you know, you start to appreciate really quickly that a lot of, when you're dealing with 40 or, you know, depending on how many people you have in your squad, how many players and what they're going on in their lives and what's happening with their girlfriends or their wives or their kids or their jobs or, you know, and suddenly you start to realize that it's a lot more important, you know, than what you previously thought. What's happening outside the white lines is consuming far more of their lives than what's happening within the white lines. And I think you just develop that kind of awareness, I suppose, for it the more you're doing it.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the podcast, Mike. The Mike Burke podcast, for anybody who hasn't heard about it, All Proceeds.
Very original name.
it's, as I say, All Proceeds to Temple Street. And it's a brilliant guest so far, Mike. Jason Sherlock, one of your most recent ones. And one of the things that actually struck me was just because you had a guest like that on. Like, is there a culture you find within the GEA and within Irish sport that people share their expertise, that people are willing to talk to other coaches and be like, here's what I think works and here's how you might be able to get the best out of your set of players or whatever situation you're in?
No, I don't. That's one of the reasons, Owen. That's one of the reasons that I wanted to do it. You know, obviously the Temple Street one was the main one because, you know, I would have had a kid up there for a couple of weeks and I've seen the incredible work that they do. And then I also felt, look, you know what, like this coaching thing, we're not going to be back on the field anytime soon. Coaches are all at a loose end. There was some of them contacting me asking for different bits and pieces. So I thought it might be a nice idea to try and tap into some of these people. You know, that idea of sharing on coaches can be really insular and protective of their own knowledge and feel that if I do give away too much that it's going to harm me in the under 12 county championship next year or something, you know. And I just wanted to try and I wanted to, like, someone like Jason Sherlock or Bernard Jackman and all these guys, like, when you actually tap into them and you ask them, would you mind coming on and sharing your knowledge? And then there's no problem, but people certainly aren't going to volunteer that kind of stuff, you know, and I just think it's really good for coaches. You know, you listen to the Jason Sherlock one and you hear, you know, him talk about his views on coaching, his philosophy and how they develop their players. And, like, that's really powerful for a guy who's, you know, been coached Dublin for five All-Irelands in a row and been so important to Jim Gavin and that Dublin team. And it's great to hear him being so open and honest about the stuff that they did. So I think if you ask them all, I think you need to ask people and sometimes they need a little bit of a push. But I think if you do, that idea of coaches sharing information now is something that's becoming a little bit more obvious than it was.
It does seem like a very Irish thing to try and prize information away from somebody or not share it. And it doesn't seem that this is just at coaching level either, Mike. It's been something that's been spoken about quite a bit when it comes to administration of the GEA, about how there is this machine operating so efficiently in Dublin and maybe a little bit of that expertise being shared around the country mightn't be a bad thing. Like, is that also the case, I wonder, like when it comes to the county board level, not in any specific county here, but all around the country, where perhaps a few more conversations with other sporting organisations or other county boards could be encouraged to ensure that people are getting the best out of their own counties?
But you're like, what are you going to lose from doing it? You know, how are you going to lose out? I mean, like the worst thing that was going to happen to me when I started the podcast was people were saying, no, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to do it. Or, you know, whereas the positive side of it is, okay, now I'm picking up stuff from Bernard Jackman. I'm picking up stuff from Jason Sherlock or Russ or whoever it is I'm talking to. Like, it might only be a small little nugget, but then it might affect the way I talk to one player or two players or affect what I do with the whole group. And from your question, if you're talking about that at a bigger level, a county board level, or, you know, where we're learning from the best to do it here, let's if it's a rugby or if it's Dublin or if it's whoever it is, now suddenly we're starting to do stuff that the best teams are doing, or the best counties are doing, or the other sports are doing. And look, you're always, from every conversation, you're going to pick up something. And I think that that culture of hoarding information or keeping quiet to ourselves, lads, is it's a very Irish thing to do. But whereas if you go to, like, if I call an American coach now or somebody, like I won't be able to stop them talking. Like, you know, I spoke to the guy, I haven't put it out yet, but I spoke to a guy in this for the podcast, a guy by the name of Nick Potter. He's the head of sports development at Duke University in men's basketball, working with Coach K, like one of the most successful college coach of all time. I couldn't get this fellow off the thing. Like, he's talking about basketball, talking about Zion Williamson, talking about Jason Tatum, talking about the specifics of what they're doing inside. I'm blown away, and this guy won't stop telling me about it. You know, whereas I could call a coach up the road, and he might be like, no, I'm not gonna tell you what I do in my football session or my hurling. You know, it's an Irish thing, but thankfully, I think it's starting to be eroded a small little bit, and people see the value of coaching and spreading that knowledge to everybody, so that you can affect as many kids as possible to stay playing the game and get a positive experience out of sport, which is all we all want, I suppose, really.
Is your sense then that in your current role as Laois manager, that is being replicated in your own county and in all the other counties in Leinster, to try and bring the level of standard up everywhere? Because it is an unavoidable conversation when it comes to Laois, when it comes to any of those counties, that the Leinster Championship has been dominated over the last 10 years and beyond. Do you feel that you're going in the right direction, and that the province in general has the resources it needs and the help it needs?
It's about three different questions there. Now, do I think that we're going in the right direction? I do. I think we're, from a playing point of view, I'm really pleased with the group that we have now, and that we'll have consistency from the group that we had last year to this year. Whereas the previous year when I joined, we had a huge turnover of players and different things. Whereas now, I'm really happy with the group that we have, because we haven't lost anybody and we've gained a couple of players, and we're really, really pleased with that. And I'm absolutely delighted with the way that they've worked in the period since we were beaten by Dublin. So yeah, I think we're really going in the right direction. I'm delighted with the backroom group and everybody that we have there. And then on the bigger one, in terms of, are the Leinster Council doing enough? I don't really know. Like, there's obviously the votes that have been deferred in terms of the structure of the championships, which counties will have an opportunity to vote on, whether it goes to, you know, the championship as a league or whatever. I think those things would be positive changes for the association in terms of the structure. I think either of those options, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but I think either of those options would be a positive change from what we have at the moment. So I think we probably need to get there and change it up and shake it up. But, you know, that'll come. I think they're not going to vote on those things, and think they could all be in a room. But that's an important change for us. I think it has to go that way. And either the provincials move, or we put a little bit more, you know, emphasis on this Tailteann Cup, which is one of the things that they're talking about as well, where they have a chance to get back up or join a division. And we need to do something in that regard. But that's a long conversation.
Mike, that's fascinating what you said there about the Irish and American psyche, the differences between them in terms of coaching. And it strikes me that on the podcast, you know, you've spoken to people from different sports. You mentioned Jason Sherlock. You mentioned the coach from Duke University in basketball, Bernard Jackman from rugby. I know you spoke to David Power from the Tralee Golf Links as well. Across all these sports, have you noticed a common trend, a common personality trait maybe between all top coaches in different sports? Is it they share more similarities than differences, I guess?
The most common thing, Shane, is that they speak about people rather than the players first. You know, that they all have that emphasis on developing the whole person as opposed to the player. And I know to some people that might sound a bit waffly and a bit. Snowflakey or whatever, but like, that's the reality of where coaching is going, and the people that are really, really good about it, understand that what's happening here is bigger than what they produce during a game or a training session. And then it's how you can marry that and develop that, their motivation for the game, by setting up your sessions, by playing games as opposed to doing drills, by involving them in the process, by talking to them, asking questions, by leaving them direct the whole thing, as opposed to, you know, being dictating to them. And all that stuff comes from a little bit of knowledge and understanding that, you know, if you really want to satisfy their motivation and you want to get the most out of them, then you really have to involve them in the process. Whereas before, coaching was all about listening to the guy in the middle blowing a whistle and shouting and dictating and telling everybody what's happening. And that's changing. Like, that's changing now to be more inclusive and more involved kind of process that the players are more than stuck into.
Can I just ask you, Mike, a lot of people, when they think about Laois football, they immediately think of Ross Munley. And he's mentioned quite recently that he intends to play on for another year. I think it would be his 19th inter-county season with Laois. He turned 38 in December. He's second only behind Stephen Cluxton for longest-serving inter-county current players, which isn't a bad company to be in. Maybe just give us a word on how important a figure Ross has been to Laois football and how important a figure he continues to be, I guess, as an influence to the younger players on your panel.
Yeah, I suppose in terms of Laois football, he's iconic. You know, he's it's unheard of for him to do what he's doing as an outfield player, and he wouldn't appreciate that kind of talk or he doesn't focus on his age, don't do anything. And like the best thing I could tell you about Ross Munley right now is we're running these time trials basically, so that they have to cover a certain distance in whatever, and Ross is in the top 3 or 4 or 5 guys that ran that time or that ran that distance. So he's not there because he's been there so long and he's a legend or whatever. He's there because he's putting in a massive effort. He does everything that you ask of him and more. And to that point, he's a good example to the guys that are there, you know, below him that are coming after him. So the newer forwards, the Mark Barrys and Dermot Whelans and these younger guys that are coming up the stream. And that's what you want. You want that kind of leadership to show this is how you do it, lads. This is where you stay after training. You work on your kicking. You work on your runs. You work on your winning a mark. You do all that stuff. And that's how you get to be as long. But you don't get to play that long without putting in a massive, you know, dedication to your body and minding yourself and your flexibility and your training and doing all that. You don't get to, it doesn't happen. Like, injuries stop you long before you get to 19 seasons is insane, you know. But it's just not a case of, him being there because of what he did. He's there because he's putting in a huge effort and making sure he's still up near the top of the tree.
Just to mention again that you can check out Mike on Twitter. The Mike Work podcast is live now, and any donations for the pod goes to Temple Street, and it sounds like there's some brilliant episodes coming up as well. Congratulations on all that, Mike, and best of luck over the next couple of months. Appreciate taking the call.
No hassle, guys. Okay, mind yourselves.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.